On March 17th, from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m., from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change, with music and commentary, we will honor Her Majesty, the Queen of Soul. She plans on retiring this year, and her birthday is March 25th. So let us honor Her Majesty, the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, on Friday, March 17th, from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM, KBOO, Portland.
The time is 6 o'clock, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland. Coming up next at 6 is Labor Radio, followed by Prison Pipeline at 6:30 and Hard Knock Radio at 7, so please stay tuned. This program is made possible by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from None Such Records, now featuring the Magnetic Fields 50-song memoir, an album that chronicles the 50 years of songwriter Stephen Merritt's life with one song per year. The Magnetic Fields 50-song memoir is available now.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening. Thank you for turning into Labor Radio, radio of, by, and for the working class. I'm Ann McDonald, here tonight with co-host Fernando Gapacin. This will be our last address. We're turning the show over to a couple of new hosts. One of them is here tonight, Stephen Siegel. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So you're a teacher with the Oregon Education Association.
That's our state-level union, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And Fernando, you wanted to say a couple things to kind of get us going tonight?
Yeah, and could we introduce your co-host, your new co-host?
Sure, yeah. His name is Chris Reiser, and Chris teaches in Portland Public Schools. He's a member of Portland Association of Teachers, and I could mention that I teach in Reynolds School District. I'm a member of Reynolds Education Association.
And he's absent on his first day of class.
Well, technically, next month's our first day. This is a little
training day.
Head start, yeah.
We'll warm up.
Reynolds is one of my favorite places. I used to be the rep for OSCA there many years. I wanted to talk about in terms of our last show. One is that we're making a transition. And when Bill Fletcher and I wrote Solidarity Divided, we wrote it as a commentary on the union movement's inability to respond to massive attacks. For instance, Taft-Hartley, Patco, Wisconsin, and the Friedrichs case. And clearly, there was a reprieve in the case of Friedrichs versus the California Teachers Association when Justice Scalia died. And teachers will be in the forefront of the upcoming struggle to save not only public education, but public services. And in general, both in Portland and nationally. In addition, the teachers also showed us in the Chicago teacher strike how the fight has to be waged in order to win. We, in our show, the show that Ann and I have hosted for 2 years now, we tried to show how communities of solidarity could be built. We had a variety of guests. We talked about the failure of the American Federation of Labor Congress of Industrial Organization and other unions, its failure to unite the public in an effort to defeat Friedrichs. In Wisconsin, for a minute, the labor movement communities united for democracy and fought back the efforts of the governor of Wisconsin to destroy the people's movement. But in Chicago, what they were able to do is create a strategy. They reformed the union itself. They connected with the natural allies of working people. They captured the interests of working people. They captured issues of race, issues of gender, sexual orientation. They took on issues of immigration. All of the issues that affect working people became the issues of the Chicago Teachers Union. And only by building that kind of a movement is the union movement and the labor movement going to be able to rebuild itself and to be that organization for justice. So for the past 2 years, we've been having guests on that would help to strengthen and educate the public about that need and about what their particular movements were doing. In this era, in this time, especially with the rise of the right wing, we think that it's vital that a voice for the public sector, for the people in general, come on and use this platform as a way of helping to build that movement. And right now, teachers are in the forefront of that struggle. They're facing, here in Portland, they've got an election coming up for a school board where there's an opportunity for people to get confused around issues of equity versus issues of justice, and there's going to be a need to unite the working people of Portland around an agenda that gets students what they need and helps to build a stronger democratic society. And so, with that in mind, Anne and I have said that it would be better if teachers took this mic and helped to really advocate for the people of Portland and Oregon.
Well, that sounds great, Fernando. And I didn't know that you had given it that much thought. But it's exciting to be here, and both Chris and I had actually been talking about wanting to do a show for the last couple of years, and just this opportunity just came up pretty quickly, and you know we're excited to get things rolling, and we think that being able to talk about labor issues and what's going on in this country from the perspective of teachers will hopefully garner a lot of interest from people. Everybody has opinions about teachers. Everybody had lots of teachers. You know, everybody went through some schooling, some more than others, but everybody has an opinion about teachers. Mm. I think everybody's probably had some teachers that they really enjoyed a lot and other teachers that maybe that they didn't enjoy so much. So people have opinions about teachers. So I think that at least my hope is that that will help us to gain an audience that is interested in what we have to say.
You said that you've been thinking about it for a couple of years. Did something happen? What was the impetus that kind of got the seed planted for you?
Well, I think that it's, I mean, it was, Chris could maybe talk more from his own perspective. I think for me that I felt like there were a lot of opinions out there and teachers are really getting bad-mouthed a lot and blamed for things. And a lot of that narrative is coming from our corporate media. So they have some real motivation to do that. And just wanting to get a counter narrative to that out there. And just thinking that, well, who's going to do it? I mean, I could point and try to get someone else to do it, but I thought, well, maybe I could do it myself. So,
Portland has got a fairly active base, and I've heard some stories in the news about successes teachers here have had along with the support of their students. Are there any like particular stories that maybe you've been involved with or were inspired by here locally?
Well, yeah, Portland Association of Teachers, of which I am not a member of, but they had a great contract campaign. I want to say two years ago or three now, students were involved in that, and as well as was a committee that included some parents and other community folks. And so they did some good things as far as organizing around what they called the schools that Portland students deserve, which modeled after the Chicago Teachers campaign. Basically they took the same name, the schools that students deserve. So really focused on what students really should be getting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's really important because sure, teachers want to, you know, be able to live a middle class kind of lifestyle and, be able to save some for retirement and all that. But people go into teaching not generally for economic reasons. They go into teaching because they really do care about kids. And that narrative, of course, is not what often comes out in the corporate media, but they do. And so to have a campaign that really emphasizes that, I feel like is important.
Yeah. We, the teachers recently, since the elections in November, I worked with folks primarily in Salem, but I know that different school districts have taken up the defense of immigrants. In Salem, the school board passed an inclusivity provision where both the school district and the teachers union took a commitment that they would safeguard their students from any ICE raids and or any use of school facilities that would endanger the students by being deported. And like in our show, where we've advocated for the immigrant rights, teachers have also taken up the issues like Black Lives Matter. In fact, adopting in many cases the platform for the movement for Black Lives. And so I'm looking, when Ann and I started this show, one of the first discussions for maybe 2 weeks with Friedrichs, mm-hmm. and the failure of the union movement to take up that issue and make it a mass issue, so that the public would begin to understand why that issue was so important, not only to the welfare of union members and the promotion of safe working conditions, but what it meant to the children in terms of education. And the thing is that I'm hoping that by using this as a platform, teachers will be ready, because that issue is going to come up real soon again. Mm-hmm. The issue that would diminish the funding available for not only teachers, but eventually the public sector in general. And it would destroy the union movement. And so as we move forward, I mean, I know that in Portland and the surrounding areas, when Reynolds struck a couple years ago, the thing is that these were models not only of militancy, but of solidarity, you know, for working people, for the communities, and so on.
Just a quick reminder, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. This is Labor Radio, radio of, by, and for the working class. I'm Anne McDonald with Fernando Gapesin. This is our farewell episode as we pass the torch to Stephen Siegel and
Chris Risen.
And Chris Risen, who couldn't make it in this evening. Fernando, as you're talking about the Friedrichs case and right to work, I feel like maybe we should unpack a little bit of what that means, what we're talking about, how it affects union capacity, and you're talking about funding for teachers and for schools. So it deals with collective bargaining rights, the rights of public sector unions to bargain for wages, benefits, and working conditions. Working conditions in this case would be things like class sizes, right, or maybe number of school hours. Is that what have you been talking about in your local lately, Stephen, with along those lines of right to work coming up on the horizon?
To be honest, we haven't really been having a lot of discussions about it. We know that with this new administration that the chances of that really being pushed forward are greatly increased. But I also wanted to just respond to some of what I heard you saying, Fernando. I have some real concerns with our union when you start talking about at the state level and national level. The leadership there is problematic, maybe is sort of a diplomatic way of putting it. The leadership from my perspective and from teachers that I talk with is really pretty insular. They're not real interested in engaging members in real significant ways. They do this sort of pseudo engagement where they'll ask members to maybe sign a petition once in a while or email their legislators, but they're not really interested in getting their members really engaged. I think that's because they want to hold on to their power. I mean, they like having their power, and they don't want a whole lot of people involved because that would diminish some of their power. So I'm worried about how teachers unions are going to respond. I think that when we start to look at some of the locals and what's going on there, then that's where the promise is. That's where the potential is for unions to be able to fight back against, you know, against the elite corporate agenda that is, you know, accelerating now with this new administration. So I just wanted to put that out there, because when you're talking about teachers unions, you're talking about multiple levels. And I think that there's a real we need to distinguish between when we're talking about the leadership in the state and national level versus when we're talking about in the locals.
When I talked about the Chicago teachers strike, I meant to look at their struggle at multiple levels, because it was a multi-year struggle. And part of that struggle was getting rid of the old leadership of their local. And the thing is that what you just said is a similar kind of a theme that many of our guests have voiced, the need to build a different kind of unionism, one that, while basically democratic, but also one that's inclusive. Inclusive of the members, inclusive of the young people, inclusive of the community interests. And the thing is that when one of my favorite themes is the amount of money that that union bureaucrats make, and I you know, there's a plenty of information about that, but certainly there's an interest on the part of many so-called union leaders to maintain their positions and to maintain the status quo. What we've encouraged is the growth of democratic movements within these unions, that to connect with folks in their communities, and to change the kind of union movement that my father used to have, and that I've had most of my life and struggled against. And so, as I said before, there are other models, but the Chicago teachers' strike, on many levels, showed us what we needed. We needed that democratic union. We needed to hear the voice of a voice that not only represented the interests of the members, but the interests of the students and the broad interests of the community. Because if the working class is going to fight back, they're going to fight back together.
Yeah, absolutely. The Chicago Teachers Union did a great job of, well, they started out, you know, there was a caucus of them, core, and they did some things around fighting some of the school closures that were going on. And so they built some alliances with community groups, with parents, and really started fighting side by side with parents for things that parents in their neighborhoods and communities wanted. And that's organizing. That's the way that unions should be operating. That's where unions have the potential to really reach their potential. And they did a great job of that. And I also just want to mention quickly that in Reynolds, we started a social justice caucus this year. So it's new. And it's made up of teachers that want to do exactly that. They want to reach out to the community and work with the community, not come in as saviors of the community, but work together with them as partners. And of course, right now, I don't know what you know about Reynolds, and it's a sort of diverse community. It serves some of East Portland and Rockwood areas. It serves Troutdale, which is very suburban. So it's a fairly diverse group of, you know, students and families. But I work in the high school, and if you walk around the high school, you hear a lot of different languages. There's, I think it's something like 40, close to 40 something percent, Latino. So, we're talking about groups that are really under attack now. And so one of the things that we want to do is work with those communities, to do what we can together to fight back against some of the things that are happening.
Well, I think it sounds like, that many of the themes that we started are going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like this will be a good platform. We've gotten feedback, you know, occasionally people have called and so on. There's even been some talk of expanding the show to an hour to actually permit people to call in, and perhaps you and Chris could help to encourage that. I'm still going to be supporting KBOO, even, you know, having to commute. Reason I was late, I had to come in from all the way from Independence, where I drive a bus, And the thing is that I got off of that bus and ran to my car, and actually another driver parked my bus for me so I could make it. I barely made it.
Skinnier teeth, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, the thing is that I feel really encouraged and happy about what's going to be happening. And one of the things that my friend, Bill Fletcher, my co-author, suggested, you know, I asked him, how would you say goodbye, you know, in terms of a radio show or a program? And, you know, sound like it was something with some meaning. And we're not quite ready to sign off yet, so I'll hold on to that. But Chris is African American, isn't he?
He is. Yes. So you'll have, you know, one white dude and one person of color doing the show.
And you know, when you mentioned Reynolds, I know some of the old leadership, like Emily, you know, and as the teachers would talk about the social justice stuff and how critical that was, that a primarily white teaching staff was really trying to address the needs of their community. Because as one slogan I saw on the walls during some of the demonstrations for Black Lives here in Portland, it said that white silence means more police violence. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that I was really encouraged by what I saw teachers doing, and the Portland effort to get a good contract was clearly an indication that people were paying attention to the good models of organizing and what potential unions could have and be, not only in Portland but nationally. Well, anyway, you know, it almost seems anticlimactic now, because it doesn't seem like there's really a sign-off, but a continuation.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing if you needed to fill some space, that Ann and I would be available to come in and talk about stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we're going to have a contract campaign coming up at the zoo here pretty soon, so that's definitely going to be keeping us busy. Who knows what'll happen there.
Sounds great.
We got 2 minutes left. I don't know, Fernando. Did you have? You said you had some special sign off.
Well,
I don't know what that is.
I'm now, now it seems to me that right here in this moment with us three, it seems that the movement is alive and has hope and potential. Then I have to go back to work. And the thing is that what I'm thinking is that I believe that essentially the labor movement spends too much time fighting each other, for one, and they spend too much time trying to maintain their institutions. And one thing that I've found in 50 years of struggle is the notion that there has to be way more collaboration between the institutional unions. And on a local level, there's never been a successful multi-union organizing regionally based campaign where multiple unions came together, collaborated, pooled their resources, and won. And I'm an advocate of regional organizing and collaborative unionism, one that's strategically planned and directed. And with that in mind, I'm thinking that Ann McDonald and Fernando Gappasin are signing off from Labor Radio.
Yeah, Thanks for tuning in. Stephen, thanks for joining us tonight. Have fun with the show.
Thank you. I will.
And thanks for tuning in to KBOO. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
On March 17th, from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m., from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change, with music and commentary, we will honor Her Majesty, the Queen of Soul. She plans on retiring this year, and her birthday is March 25th. So